Ron Van Dam. He's a man ahead of his time, which means he shows up 15 minutes early for everything. It's incredibly annoying. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show, right on time on New England Broadcasting.
Sorry I'm late.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you so much.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
All right, calm down. Stop screaming with love and understanding for me. I appreciate it. All right. I don't know anymore. Welcome to the program. This is a show of enormous proportions. Look at the size of this thing. Going to fade out on the music because it's enough of it already. How are you? Welcome to the program. It's Tuesday, the second day of the week, depending on how you look at it. If Sunday starts your week, this would be the third day. If Tuesday starts your week, this is the beginning of the Tuesday week. I don't know. I don't know what country you're from. I don't know if it works that way. I don't know if you live in Zimbabwe, is Tuesday the first day of the week? It could be. I don't know. I don't live there. So I can't account for everybody. I can't be responsible for everybody anymore. I really can't. It's so much pressure, so much on my shoulders. Look at my shoulders. There's a lot of pressure on them. I can't. I just can't. I can't be responsible for everything. I can't watch CNN anymore or any of those 24-hour news networks. I can't be concerned that there's a little girl who's trapped in a cave in Zimbabwe. I can't. I'm not responsible. I didn't put her there. I can't do anything about it. I don't have to know about it. I'm sorry for the little girl that's stuck in the cave. I hope they get her out. I'm sure they will. But I can't have to know about it. It's not only that I'm not responsible for the whereabouts of this girl or what happened to her in a cave somewhere in Zimbabwe, which is a location I cannot even spell. I know it starts with a Z. After that, I'm kind of lost. But I don't have to know about that. I feel bad for her. There's no reason I should know about that. By the way, there is no girl who is stuck in a cave in Zimbabwe. I made that up as an example of me not having to know everything that goes on in the world. I'm very, very sorry about that. Obviously, today I am, for some reason, devoting my program to Zimbabwe. I don't know why. Because it's one of the few places I know that begins with a Z. I just don't know any other places. There's the zoo. I've been to the zoo before. It's so damn hot outside. It is so damn hot. Do you know the pavement is so hot you could fry an egg or you could actually roast a pig? Yeah, I know. That's hot. That's very hot outside. You could fry a chicken. It's so hot on the... You could fry a chicken on the sidewalk. That's not a bad idea, actually. It might be tasty. I think they do that in Zimbabwe, as a matter of fact. That's their preferred way of cooking chicken out there. But I can't be responsible for that, and I can't care about people that eat chicken off the street. It's called street food. Some people get all excited about that. As you're going down the food festival, they've got the food there in the street. Oh, great. What a great place for food to be, where there's no refrigeration or any means of sanitation. What a great idea. Do you ever get food from a food truck? For some reason, that's romantically interesting. Oh, I got this food from, I got it was a pulled pork sandwich, and I got it from a food truck. You got food from a truck? Yes. It was on the highway and they slowed down and they sold me a pulled pork sandwich. What are they doing pulling pork? Why is that the only meat that's pulled? Yeah, I ate pork. There were people pulling on it. Oh, it tastes good when people pull on pork. It's like a tug of war with pork. It's fun. Yeah, it was really good pork. People were pulling on it. They pulled it. Okay, that's nice. I got it from a truck. It's the best pork I ever had. It's from a truck. I had a hot dog from a motorcycle. I don't know how that happened, but it was very good. It was fresh off the motorcycle. It was really tasty. I actually trust people that cook inside trucks. I think that's an excellent idea. It's like a rolling kitchen without any sanitation, without any type of control. I love eating off of a truck. Like roadkill. If I see a dead squirrel or a raccoon, pulled squirrel, tasty. Barbecue sauce, nice. Fresh off the truck. All right, fine. Hey, if you have a food truck, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I'm just saying. I don't know. I don't know anymore. I don't know. We get our food delivered to us. I've talked about that before. Too damn lazy to go get the food yourself. Did you know that our ancestors, who basically were all members of Ancestry.com, that's how they know who the ancestors were. They all signed up like generations ago. They used to have to do that. That's how they know. It's not DNA. People just signed up and whatever. Yeah, our ancestors, they had to get bows and arrows. And they had to go out into the woods and into the jungle, and they had to kill the animals, and they had to skin them alive. I don't know if they were alive at the time, and they were hunter gatherers. They hunted and then they gathered to gather that. I gather that's what they did. And they had to hunt them and then cook them, and that was just so they could have a meal and feed their family. Wow, that sounds like, a lot of work. Well, that's what they did. That's what they did. The men, because they're macho, the men would put on boots and they would go into the wild and get the wild animals and bring them back. And then they have to skin them, and the females who weren't capable of voting or anything, they could have children, but that's about all. They cooked because that's what they're supposed to do. And that's what happened. What do you do now for your meal? Oh, I Grubhub. They just bring it by. I call them and they bring it over and that's it. Doesn't that sound a little wussy in comparison? I think it does. You know, your ancestors used to go into the woods and find the food and there's it. Oh, I just dial this phone number and I tell them what I want. They bring it over to the house. That's what I do. You're even too lazy to go pick up the food yourself, huh? I can understand how you're too much of an ignoramus to cook anything. But you won't even go get the food. You have to have it brought unto you. Bring me the food. I decree that I shall have a large turkey leg smothered in onions, and you shall bring it upon me at my leisure, at my bidding. Bring it to me, bring it unto me, and present it in front of me. And if you don't do that, I'll behead you. I will not only head you, I will behead you. And I will off with your head and off with your clothes, and take those pants off, and I'll behead you, but I won't behead you with your pants on. Because that's stupid. If I'm going to behead you, then you should take your clothes off. But bring the food unto me, and wrap it in one of those containers that keeps the freshness and the goodness contained within the container, thus the word container. Keep it warm in one of those little blankets that you bring the pizza unto me. Bring me the flat bread with the shit on top, and bring it unto me. And as a reward for you, I shall give you one of my famous paper dollar bills that I have kept upon the chosen of the people, and that shall be my gesture towards you as I behead you as I eat my pizza, and bring it unto me the next time I ask for it as well. That's the way we do things now. We just bring it unto us. Yeah, I know. I don't know. It's kind of strange the way we eat. It is. People get all excited about ribs, taking the actual ribs from the animal and sucking on them. What the hell's wrong with us? I don't know. Why it's so hot outside, I could roast the ribs on the sidewalk. Straight from the sidewalk to my mouth. A little barbecue sauce, we're all set. You see, that's what the cowboys used to do, you understand? They used to gather around the campfire. These cowboys, these macho men, who are all bow-legged from sitting on horses all day. I don't know, whatever your choice is, I can't imagine how there were any children with all these semen-deficient cowboys walking around, bouncing their little balls around on the top of a horse. I don't know how they were even potent. Well, they thought they were. They were very important. But they sat around a campfire, and they used to touch each other and stuff. And I don't like campfires. Yeah. A couple of drinks at a campfire. You're having sex with people you don't want to have sex with, I'm telling you. Campfires also, I mean, they're like the front of your face is burning and the back of your head is cold. It's just kind of like weird. It's like broiling your body. It's the same thing when you go to the beach. Oh, my God, what is up with that? That's the summer is so screwed up. So screwed up. People go to the beach and they actually rotisserate themselves. They are rotisseries without the spit. They just lie on the sand, and the sun just bakes them just right at 350 degrees for half an hour, and then you're done. They put oil on themselves, olive oil, first cold press, and they smother themselves in oil, which is basically how you cook a chicken, as far as I'm concerned, on the sidewalk. And then they turn over and they do the other side because, you know, you want your meat to be evenly cooked. And then they go home and then they actually skin themselves alive by peeling off the skin. It comes off by itself, and you're nice and red and juicy and tasty. That's called rare. That's called rare meat. And that's how we cook a human, basically. It's the same way the cannibals do it. Not the camels, the cannibals. They take the people and they put them in a big pot. Haven't you watched jungle movies? They take human beings and they put them in a large pot. And they boil them, but first they sear them at the beach with olive suntan oil, and then they eat them. They eat their ribs. Very, very tasty. That was a tasty human I had yesterday. Was it really, Mr. Dahmer? Yes, it was. There was a lot of fat on the ribs and some good meat, some good eating. What'd you have yesterday? What kind of human did you have for dinner last night, Jeffrey? Oh, it's Chinese. These Chinese, they're tasty. They're very tasty. We use various sauces on them. They're very good. I think we're going to have Mexican tomorrow night. We'll have Mexican. That's always tasty.
Have you ever had Italian?
Yeah, they're feisty, but they're tasty. They're very, very good. You put a little tomato sauce on their head. and you got yourself some good eating. Some good eating. When I was a kid, I used to go to summer camp. It was the only time they had camp. My parents wanted to rid me of my personality toward them during the summer, so they sent me to summer camp. And the major activity at summer camp was roasting marshmallows. That's what we did. The camp counselors, who were wannabe power-hungry young people, they would send us into the woods, and we would get a dirty stick that probably squirrels and various animals had pissed upon, because the sticks were always lying on the ground. And we would take these sticks, and then they would give us a bag of marshmallows, and we'd put the marshmallow at the end of this dirty, piss-laden stick. Healthy as hell, you know, healthy as hell. And then we would take this marshmallow on this long stick, and we hold the marshmallow over the campfire directly until it was black and burnt and carbonated. That means there's a lot of carbon on it. It was just black. We were just eating basically burned sugar. And then you put it in your mouth, never realizing just how hot this sucker is. It's like licking on lava. And your mouth would burn, and then you would touch the guy next to you and have your first homosexual experience. This is what campfires were. Sitting in a circle with other boys, burning their mouths on sugar and twigs. And then we would tell scary stories. And I used to say, there's no reason to tell scary stories. Sitting in a circle with other boys around a fire, burning our mouths, is a scary story enough. There's your scary story. Don't tell me about monsters lurking in the woods, because to be honest with you, the monsters are not lurking in the woods. They're sitting in a circle with me. And then these strange little bugs would be crawling up my back. I don't know what they were. They could have been leeches. They could have been spiders. I have no idea. Let's have a great time sitting around the campfire and telling stories with other boys in close proximity, who many of them were still discovering their bodies in places and at moments that were inappropriate for the human race. And in the meantime, all the girls, I don't know where they were, because summer camp was just, you have to spend it with other boys. There's no co-ed stuff going on. You spend it with other boys. I'll tell you something else. It was disgusting. When I went to middle school, junior high school, that kind of thing, high school, There were the gymnasium classes, which were very, very uncomfortable for me because I was with a large group of boys my own age doing very, very odd activities. And then at the end of the class, we'd all take a shower in the boys. Now, I don't know what women do in there. I've never been in a woman's locker room when there were women in it, so I don't know what went on. But I'll tell you, in a boys' locker room in school, the shower heads just come out of the wall and there are no divisions whatsoever. And we're completely naked. It's a large tiled room full of naked boys showering themselves and cleaning themselves, supposedly. It was the most awkward, strangest activity of my life. I don't need to be standing in a tiled room where all the boys are naked and half of them don't belong in society. A very, very odd situation, to say the least. But yet, it did occur. I don't know, kids. Life is strange. It really is. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I have an interesting guest that will be joining us. But before we do that, there's, well, this. Speaking of naked people.
Hi, this is Bob Robinson from Bob's Handy Around the House. I'm a local handyman. I've been in business for the last 50 years on my own, doing light repair work in our area. Whatever you need done. Carpentry, painting, floors, tiling, yard work. I can do it all for you. I'll come to your home and do the work for a very reasonable fee. Naked. I should probably mention that I will be naked while I do this work. Buck naked, not a stitch on me, waving in the wind, in my birthday suit, showing what God gave me. Naked as a jaybird. I'll be naked the whole time. I show up naked. I do the work naked. You pay me while I'm naked. Bob's Handy Around the House. Bob Robinson. You can look me up on Facebook where I am naked.
Dr. Paula Kahumbu joins us now, CEO of Wildlife Direct. And we're talking about the African elephants. I understand they're one of the largest animals on the planet.
Well, yes, African elephants are the biggest land mammal on this planet, the biggest land mammal that's ever walked on planet Earth, actually.
Wow. Bigger than possibly the dinosaurs? Well, no.
Well, dinosaurs were reptiles.
That's true. Oh, you got me there. Okay. And apparently, I mean, we all know some horrible stories and horrible images of these creatures being haunted by man.
Well, Ron, let me just start by saying that elephants are, you know, amazing, amazing animals. I've spent donkey's years, you know, studying them in the wild. These are animals that are so like human beings. They live in families. They're very compassionate. They're very, they have a lot of empathy for each other. And they seem to also have an amazing sense of themselves and human beings. So when I'm with elephants, I feel something that I can't even describe in words. Mm-hmm. It's just quite magical. So when you hear that people are killing elephants, shooting them, so that they can remove their two front teeth, their incisors, in order to send them half a world away to a country like China or Japan or here to the United States to make ivory trinkets, it's not just tragic, it's infuriating. These are animals that don't deserve to be slaughtered for their teeth. It's just not acceptable.
It's unthinkable. You know, we hear about the population of bees and pollination and, you know, that's a concern. As it's inhumane to do things like that to animals, what is the significance in our ecosystem of elephants?
That's a really, really great point. I mean, elephants are probably the most important animal in Africa. They occupy every single ecosystem you can imagine except the coral reefs because they don't live in the ocean. But they live in savannas and forests, up on the tops of mountains, down in swamps. They play a very vital role in modifying and creating ecosystems because they eat so much vegetation and so much fruit that they're constantly dispersing seeds. And many trees and plants depend on elephants in order to be dispersed. They won't germinate unless they go through the gut of an elephant. So without elephants, which are really considered one of the most important keystone species in Africa, without them, we will basically see ecosystems simplify. You'll see species disappearing, including, in some cases, bees and other species like that. And it's really significant, this, because, you know, this is an animal that we all grew up with in our stories when we were children. We have all kinds of iconic things about elephants all around us throughout our growing up. And if we can't save this animal, something which we all love, something that is the largest animal on this, largest mammal on this planet, if we can't save elephants, how on earth will we save species like bees, which we can't even relate to in the same way?
Yes. I understand, Paula, that the African elephant actually has a lot of human traits. And unfortunately, we as human beings, we judge everything as to what's similar to us, which is kind of mindless, but we do that anyway. But apparently elephants have some traits that we should actually respect that we can identify with.
It's so interesting that you say, I think it's so important that elephants are like human beings, mm-hmm. because it gives us an access to their world and a real sense of connection and relatedness. I am always just so moved when I'm with elephants. It's almost like time stops or time mm-hmm. stands still. Elephants are far, far better at us in so many things. So, for example, they can communicate using infrasonic sounds. They can communicate over tens of kilometers and stay in touch with each other over vast distances. They can communicate in language. In fact, the more we understand about them, the more we realize that we hardly know anything about them. Yeah. And at the same time, they're actually disappearing. I think that we have a lot to learn from elephants. They are ruled by their females. They live in family structures that are stable throughout their lives. So grandmothers, mothers, aunts, sisters, babies, they all stay together for their whole lifetimes. And, yeah. and they're very gentle and they don't war. They don't fight with each other. They're very compassionate creatures.
Right.
I think we have a lot to learn from them.
Yeah. You know, one of the sad things I think about human beings is that, and basically I get along with animals better than I do people, but that's besides the point. But it's sad that human beings put themselves in a separate category from animals, because human beings are nothing but animals that have evolved differently.
It's so true, but that's only human beings over here, because come to Africa, and the Maasai people who I work with believe mm-hmm. that elephants are actually people. In fact,
Good. They
believe we came from elephants, that elephants were there first, right? So,
Good.
So but there is this very strong spiritual connection to elephants who are considered kind of like mm-hmm. Ancestors to human beings, and so they aspire to be more like elephants. But I think it's really important that we recognize that as human beings who have power and influence, we can do something about this slaughter. We can prevent them from disappearing.
Sure.
We shouldn't give up that responsibility just because they're in Africa and we're here in the United States. I think it's really important that we call on everyone around the world to participate in saving elephants, because the trade in ivory is a global issue. And we need the world
certainly.
To come together and say, forget the ivory trade. We don't need that stuff. We need elephants.
Well,
we need them
yeah.
for generations.
To kill a species like that for financial gain is absolutely disgusting. But we all know that occurs, and we do get infuriated about it. Is indeed the African elephant population dwindling quickly?
It is. We have about 400,000 elephants left in Africa, and they're declining at a rate of 8% per year. And that's because every 15 minutes, an elephant is being gunned down for its ivory. That means, Ron, that in our lifetimes, elephants could disappear. Our children and our grandchildren may never be able to see African elephants in the wild. It's just a horrible future
yeah.
that I just can't imagine it.
But we have in the past been able to turn things around with certain species that were endangered. We have turned corners, and we can do that with the African elephant as well.
Absolutely. There's actually a lot of things that we can do all over the world. But the first thing I'll say is people should not buy ivory. Absolutely reject
right.
ivory and anybody who has or owns or wants to sell or buys ivory. The other thing that you can do is support the conservation groups on the ground. So Amarula, the company that Wildlife Crypt is partnering with, is donating $1 for every bottle of Amarula sold here in the United States
okay.
from September to December. That enables us to do critical work on the ground in the field. You can also go to their website, amarula.com, to find out more about the campaign. We've called it Don't Let Them Disappear. And this campaign really seeks to raise that level of global awareness. And on my organization's website, wildlifegrid.org, you can learn more about our critical work on the ground, in the field, in Kenya. We work in courtrooms. We make sure that criminals, so poachers and ivory traffickers, are arrested, prosecuted, and thrown in jail for a very, very long time. You know, our new laws will put people behind bars for 20 years or longer.
Wonderful.
That's where they belong.
So to help with the contribution, that's, I'll spell it, it's Amarula. .com. And Paula, the spelling of the website in regards to supporting?
Wildlife Direct.
Wildlife Direct. Okay.
That's
excellent.
Correct.
Thank you so much for your time today. I'm glad you were able to speak to all of us about this.
Thank you so much for your support, Ron. I really appreciate it.
You take care now. Bye-bye. Well, that'll do it for me today. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. But until that time arrives, I wish you peace.